Well, just a few years ago, the words social media would have generated a lot of blank stares, I think. But today, many of us use and enjoy staying in touch with friends and family through sites like Facebook or following the news and other hot topics on blogs and on Twitter. But what about those tools to find a job or maybe to expand your professional network? Don Stanley is a faculty associate in life sciences communication, where he teaches social media and web courses. He's also owner of 3 Rhino Media, which is a social web and strategy business. Great to have you back, Don, to talk about social media. Appreciate you being with us.
Great to be here. Really happy to be back.
I want to give our listeners a chance to join in, and you can do it on our social media. You can go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, and you can post a question or a comment there. Or you can email us at talk@WPR.org or call us. And that number is 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. And I know a lot of us use social media as a way to keep in touch with friends and family. These are also good tools to build professional networks.
Absolutely. They're incredibly valuable. It's something I'm talking a lot more to with businesses. We work with a lot of businesses, helping them understand how to use social to connect with their clients. And what I started seeing was a lot of people were saying, well, can it help me get a job? Can it help me with my career? And one of the things most people don't know, and this is very true of the students I work with, the average person in their 20s will spend about 13 months at the average job. The average person who's 30 and over will spend about 36 months at a job. So people are changing jobs all the time. And one of the biggest challenges is, how do you help yourself move up or grow into businesses or organizations where you're happy? And social media is an incredibly valuable tool to help you build connections and start promoting yourself, much more so than the traditional methods that people are familiar with.
Yeah. So did you say 13 months?
13 months is the average of time that somebody in their 20s will spend in a job. They'll turn over a job every 13 months. Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, the average person, by the time they finish their quote-unquote career, will go through 14 to 16 jobs. So it's very different. My dad worked at a Alice Chalmers for 38 years and, you know, retired from Alice Chalmers and not so much anymore. So it's really helpful to be thinking about, how do you want to position yourself so that businesses and organizations actually seek you out and see you as somebody they want to bring on board? And wide variety of industries. It is not just for people in social at all. It's for a wide, wide, wide variety of industries.
Well, now, what kind of social media platforms are best for connecting with colleagues and professional peers?
That's a great question, and it depends. LinkedIn is obviously the one that most people think of, and it's probably, I would say, the most misunderstood. A lot of people, and I see this, and you probably see it with a number of your students when they're getting ready to graduate, is they throw their resume up on LinkedIn. But what LinkedIn has is a large volume of serious professionals. The average person who's on LinkedIn is a six-figure earner, typically works for a business or is a business owner, and looks to network in a professional way with people. So there's lots of LinkedIn groups where people talk about things that are relevant to their industries. They build connections. So it isn't a resume place per se. And if you're using it that way, it's kind of like having a Ferrari and using it to drive a block to go get groceries. You know, you're really not using it appropriately. And so it's a great way to start contributing and participating in communities and getting people to know who you are. And like, for example, I know that UW has a fabulous, and they're all built by alums who are not affiliated necessarily with campus, connections where you can join UW alumni groups who will help you if you're moving to different parts of the country or the world to find fellow Badgers to help you connect and link with other Badgers in different industries. And that's, just that alone is a great way to build network.
Absolutely. You know, I just had to change my password.
Yes.
On LinkedIn. I hate changing. I mean, you're supposed to do it anyway, but I have so many passwords and it's so hard to remember them all. It's a little security issue there.
Absolutely. Yep. They had a little whoops where a large volume of passwords were compromised and they had people hack in. And the bigger the network, the more people will try to hack in. And so, you know, what happened was a lot of people had their usernames and passwords taken, and so LinkedIn had told everybody after the fact that they should change their passwords. But that is one of the always the, you know, concerns that people have is, you know, how safe is my information? What should I be putting up? What should I be sharing? And I always say, if you don't want it on a billboard along the side of the road where mm-hmm. everybody can see it and it's a traffic jam, so they're driving really slow, mm-hmm. you know, don't put it up there.
Yeah. And so if you have a LinkedIn account, you should probably do like I did.
Absolutely. Yep. Absolutely. Make sure to change your password if you haven't. They did send out a notification and telling everybody who had an account that didn't necessarily tell you whether or not your account username and password were compromised, but recommending that you change it. So, yes, if you have not, you definitely should.
Don Stanley, our guest, faculty associate in life sciences communication and owner of Three Rhino Media, a social web and strategy business, talking with him today about social media for professional networking and a little about social media just in general. I hope you'll join in if you have questions or comments, or maybe you've got a good experience to share or a bad one. We'd love to hear it. Either way, at 1-800-642-1234. Could email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd love to hear from you. So give us a call, shoot us an email, go to my Facebook page, one of those. I guess, you know, you kind of want to keep some social media sites just for fun mm-hmm. and others just professional.
Yep. And that's, I do that. I know a lot of other people do as well. And it's, you know, it's, there's more of an integration of your personal life and professional life than ever before, but still, you know, I think it's mm-hmm. it's nice to do that. And some people will argue that Facebook is that arena where people spend more, are more social per se, whereas Twitter and LinkedIn tend to be a little bit more professional. I don't know if that's necessarily true. But I do think it is important to have that balance of being able to be, you know, balance that social out with the professional. I think that's very helpful.
And it's obviously social media can be a good tool for job hunting.
Oh, absolutely.
How do you see people using those successfully?
I'll just give you a quick example from my class this past semester. I had a student who was a science writer, graduate student, just about to finish her degree, and she took my course. And one of the things that we do with clients as well as with students is say, well, what's your ultimate goal? Who do you want to be recognized by so that people start to see you as an expert? And she had listed Scientific American magazine, which is, you know, kind of mm-hmm. a holy grail for science writers.
Yeah.
And she'd been blogging and writing for a number of years with very limited results. Mm-hmm. You know, had a small following, but it wasn't a huge one, and nobody that was significant in industry. Well, she applied a lot of the concepts that we talked about that we do with clients as well as with students throughout the course of the semester. And about 2 months into the semester, she kind of tapped me on the shoulder and said, hey, you got to check this out. I said, well, what do you got? And Scientific America not only had contacted her using the techniques where she reached out to them to build a connection initially, but they featured her as an up-and-coming science writer on their website, which, you know, was not only helpful for her in terms of feeling like she had reached their class objectives, but it's pretty big on a resume to get some traction where Scientific American is saying, hey, you've got to check this person out. They're an up-and-coming person in our industry. So there are ways to do things where you identify the industry you want to work in, who are kind of the big names to get connected with. And with social, you can connect with people on a level that you couldn't before. And, you know, you can make some incredible connections that can help you build, you know, awareness of who mm-hmm. you are and what you bring yes. to the table, as well as help you potentially make some connections. So you go into a job interview and people feel like they know you already. And, yeah, it was pretty amazing. We've had a number of those success stories.
We'll have to talk about some of the things that she did or some examples of things that. But I want to give Katie in Marquette, Michigan is up, I believe, with a question. So let's go there. Katie, hi, thank you for calling.
Yes.
Good morning.
What's on your mind?
I work at a university, and I utilize social media as a way of interacting with my student staff and the students that are in my classes. I'm a professor, and I also work in a recreation center. And I was wondering if you had any guidelines or suggestions about being friends with your students or student employees on Facebook.
Great question. What do you do right now, just out of curiosity?
What do I do?
Yeah, do you friend them? Do you?
What we do is I have a group set up for student employees, as an example, that work for me in the rec center. And so we post meeting minutes and we post other relevant information about things that are going on in the facility, because they obviously are utilizing that as a primary means of communication and figuring out what's going on with things. So obviously to add them to a group, I have to be friends with them.
And one of the things you can do is with Facebook is limit who gets to see what. And Facebook did this as a reaction to what Google Plus did, where Google Plus, which is another social network tool that was created by Google, has circles. So you can circle people as acquaintances, friends, family, and et cetera. So are you doing that with the students by chance?
Kind of, yes.
Okay, because that's what we do. I mean, I think it's really important to... I make it clear that until somebody finishes school, I am not going to, you know, friend them and share stuff. And I usually don't. I explain that I have a very limited number of people that I interact with on a social way on Facebook. Professionally, I do quite a few. So that's kind of the approach that I take, and I make it clear to them ahead of time that that's the approach in terms of how I interact with my students on Facebook.
Right.
So it's kind of just, you know, doing a little due diligence, making sure that they're in the right category so that you're not sharing stuff with them that you don't necessarily want to share. and on the flip side, I don't know if you've had this happen, but I've had it happen in the past where a couple of students have said, well, I can't attend class because I'm sick or I'm, you know, something's going on. And then you follow their... And I say, well, wow, that's fun. You were at the Brewer game and not feeling well. You probably shouldn't tell me that. You know? So a note to students as well. It pays to be honest, but be careful, because if you friend us, we can sometimes see stuff as well.
Overall, it would just be being realistic about, you know, setting the boundaries and
absolutely
making an appearance. Okay.
Absolutely. Right, I think it's as simple as that.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling.
Yeah, thank you.
Appreciate the call. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@WPR.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for listening in on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest Don Stanley, faculty associate in life sciences communication and owner of 3 Rhino Media. It's a social web and strategy business, talking with him about social media for professional networking and sort of distinguishing it perhaps from friend networking. So we're talking about that as well, and certainly looking forward to your questions and comments. You can reach us at 1-800-642-1234, email at talk@WPR.org, or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, post a question or a comment there. And by the way, lost my train of thought there for just a second. In terms of job hunting, are there some tips about actually using the media to job hunt?
I think, yeah. Yes, the biggest thing is to, obviously you need to be clear about what it is that you want to do. So the first thing, and I'm a huge advocate of using various tools to know where your strengths are and what it is that you want to do. But then identify businesses and organizations that you would want to work for and find out who in those industries or who in those specific businesses are on social and start making connections with them. Start demonstrating to them that you like a job interview. You can do this via social, and it is incredibly valuable, just like the student I'd mentioned earlier. You can start demonstrating that you're knowledgeable, that you're enthusiastic, that you have a strong ability to communicate, and it's essentially like an extended job interview, but like a pre-interview in a lot of cases. Mm-hmm. And you get to have access to, I mean, I was telling somebody yesterday how valuable it's been for me. Forbes magazine came out with a list of 50 of the most powerful social media influencers in the world, and four of them are my personal friends now. Mm-hmm. And the reason is because I connected with them through social. If it would have gone any other way, they wouldn't have given any, most of us the time of day. And so the same thing can happen is if you know people in your industry that you want to connect with, or businesses in your industry, and you want to show them that you can add to the conversation, you can bring some knowledge that you're worthy of an interview and getting hired. It's a great way to think of it as a pre-interview and start reaching out to people via Twitter. You don't want to reach out and say, hey, can I have a job?
No. You know? So what? How do you reach out then? Will you just, contribute to the discussions.
Yeah, absolutely. That's exactly right. So think of it as a networking event where you want to prove to somebody that you have the ability to add to conversations. So help them with, sharing their information with your followers if you're using Twitter, or your friends if you're on Facebook or LinkedIn. Share something that they might not have heard of and say, I saw you guys were talking about, XYZ product. Are you familiar with this product? And just, again, start getting on their radar. And it's, again, incredibly easy to do. It does take time, but it's easy to do. And the number one traits of people getting hired or people working with people in business, there's three of them that I live by. It's people do business with or hire people they know, they like, and they trust. And that's why you hear most jobs are filled by people who, I got a referral from, does anybody know somebody who we should hire? It's the same thing, but you can build that knowability, likability, and trustability through social, so you don't have to be in a person's personal network at first. So it's really, really neat.
We have Joe in Franklin next with a question for you, Don. So let's go to Joe. Hi, Joe. Thank you for calling.
Good morning, Joe.
You're welcome. Good morning. Not a question, but just in regard to the previous caller, the professor. Keeping information separate. I just set up different Facebook accounts, and that way there's no chance of information spilling from one to the other.
That you can do that. Technically, you're not supposed to, and so but that, and I know lots of people who do. Technically, Facebook only wants you to have one account, period, although people will say, one account per email address. But that is a way that, you can definitely get around having that issue if you do have separate accounts.
So how do you set up separate accounts? So
you'd have different email addresses. You can use different email addresses to set up the accounts. And again, I do know people who do that. So they have different accounts, one that they manage all of their private stuff, one that they manage all of their business or public stuff that they want to share in a university or academic setting. So,
very cool. Thanks, Joe.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Appreciate the call. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. An email from Lorraine in Mineral Point, who says, people have told me they like Google Plus, but the drawback is that there aren't that many people on it yet. How is it different from Facebook, for example?
Great question. This is one that I get a lot, and we get a lot, is that Google Plus is one of the big benefits of Google Plus versus Facebook is there aren't as many people there, although there are a lot of people there. Mm-hmm. Several hundred million accounts. And what that means is that your ability to connect with and interact with, especially professionally, with thought leaders, with people who are in hiring positions, with people who can help you advance your career, is much higher because there's less competition for their attention. Virtually all the people I know who are big names in a variety of industries have a Google Plus account. So, there's less competition for interaction. If you're doing anything, one of the big things that we advocate too for businesses as well as individuals is blogging. And that's a huge way to help differentiate yourself as well. And Google Plus has search connectivity that Facebook doesn't because of Google. Mm. So it helps a lot with what's called search engine optimization. So if people are searching by keywords or key questions, the content rates much higher than something that would be on Facebook or on Twitter or somewhere like that. Because again, Google wants to promote their own product. So Google, if you think of it as there's the two biggest search tools right now, are Google and YouTube, and both of them are owned by Google. So Google Plus integrates really, really nicely into that. So that, you know, it's one of those where, again, it's kind of like a LinkedIn where you're reaching out more to thought leaders, people who tend to be more of the innovators. If you think of the diffusion of innovations, mm-hmm. if I could give that lecture, mm-hmm. But it's the early adopters, you know, the innovators that you get. And so again, it's a good place to go to connect with those higher level people in terms of, again, thought leadership and building your awareness in terms of people saying, hey, I know who Lorraine is because I've connected with her on Google+.
Blogging, let's talk about that for just a little bit. Setting up a blog and running a blog can be very useful.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's a huge area that we help a lot of businesses and individuals with. You know, and the idea behind blogging is that it originally started out as a way almost for people to journal online is the way that people thought of it. And blog just stands for, it was supposed to mean a online log. So when you look at how blogging plays out, it's a great way for, again, you and your industry. And I have examples from industries where you're like, I didn't even know that industry existed, of people who've built very, very successful businesses or have built themselves into positions where they actually get contacted and hired, where they blog on whatever topic they think is relevant and salient to them. I mean, everything from Pez dispensers to woodworkers to medical stuff to, you know, athletic stuff. And so the idea is to start sharing your thoughts and your expertise on a topic. And all of us have expertise. And the thing that I like about blogging, and some people will rip on it because of this, is you don't need to write it as a dissertation or a thesis. You just need to share content that's helpful. So whether it's photography tips or tips on how to get hired or plant gardens or whatever your arena is, it's a great way for businesses to separate and differentiate themselves as well. And so you can, and the technology's free. I mean, there's a lot of great free technology that you can use. Setting up a blog doesn't take much time, technically, to put together.
But it does require maintenance.
Correct. Yes. Yep. Yep.
You can't just set it up and then not use it.
Correct. And that does happen a lot. What, you know, and the biggest thing that's great about a blog, an example, I had a guest lecture business called HubSpot, which is a huge company in our industry. It's one of the top 100 social businesses in the world. And they told the story of a gentleman who is trying to get hired at HubSpot. And for every one job HubSpot has, you get about 300 applicants. Very motivated. They're very, very, very picky, and they can be with 300 applicants per job. But this gentleman put together a blog, and it was called Hired Me HubSpot. And so his whole blog was about making people understand at HubSpot how he knew what they did, how he understood the culture, how he could bring value to them, and wrote specifically to them. He eventually ended up getting hired. And one of the neat things he did was he purchased Facebook ads that anytime anybody who worked at HubSpot was on Facebook, a Facebook ad popped up with, "Hire me HubSpot, 7 reasons why you need to hire so-and-so."
Wow.
You know, and so, yeah, and, you know, I mean, he was, you know, they sought him out then because he was
really sharp.
Yeah. So you don't necessarily need to go to that extent. But, you know, the first thing that happens when people get job offers or apply for a job is the HR will go and do a search for you online to find out, who are you? Should we even consider you? Because it takes a lot of time to interview people. And so the blogs are a great way for you to, again, like a pre-interview that you can also do when you incorporate it with social media to say, I know what I'm talking about. I can talk clearly mm-hmm. and saliently about this, and I can bring value to what it is that you're doing.
We have an email from Michelle in Wausau who says, Facebook seems to change its settings weekly. My boss friended me on Facebook and I accepted, but changed the privacy settings so as not to see many of my posts. And then she began commenting on my posts. The settings had changed and she now had the ability to view my posts. It's not fail-safe.
The joys of Facebook.
Yeah.
That's one of the big reasons that a lot of people are still saying that Google+ has been out a little less than a year. You know, 5 years from now, there are a number of people who are industry experts in social who are saying they're not sure Facebook will be around. And that's one of the reasons is that Facebook doesn't really do the best job, in my opinion and the opinion of others, of really taking people's concerns to heart. I was just reading an article about one of the big reasons that a lot of leaders are switching to Google Plus is Google Plus, while, you know, you have the same privacy issues you might have with Facebook, they make it much easier to see the settings and change the settings versus Facebook, which makes it not easy
hard.
To do. And not only do they make it hard, but exactly as Michelle is saying, they change it on you without really telling you that they're changing it, which, you know, in a case like
why
that.
Why do they do that?
I think it's because they can. Sometimes I really do. It's a good question, you know, and that's one of the reasons that I'm excited about Google Plus is that Facebook had no competition for a long time, so they could do things with impunity, and you know, yeah. What was there to, you know, it didn't matter. They could do what they want. But that's one of the big questions is what's the value of doing that and making people upset, and I don't have an answer to that. I don't get it. It's not good business to me, but
I don't understand it either. It just makes no sense at all. Well, you may have a question or comment or maybe an experience to share of your own about social media and using it. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question or a comment there. You know, we have talked a bit about people's activity on social media and how it can be a negative during a job search.
Yes.
And maybe we should remind people a little bit more about how that can be the case.
Absolutely. Again, the number one rule is to know that when you're putting anything out on social, most of us don't understand what that actually means, who owns it, and how that content can be collected, how that content can be saved. A lot of people will put something up and think that, okay, if I want to quick take it down, I can, but they're capture tools.
Yeah.
So you just want to be, again, not say anything or do anything that is out of the realm of making you not look professional. And I know just personally, not only when it comes to the heated things like the politics that we've had in the state the last several months, but a lot of just personal stuff that people share that's kind of questionable about whether or not you should actually share it. Is it the best place to vent? Not really, you know. Is it, you know, so and there are questions about, you know, who should be able to see your content and what they should be able to do. But I always point out there was a Division I star athlete out of New Jersey who had a private had his Twitter account set to private. He was going to an all-boys Catholic school and posted some things that were pretty inappropriate, but he figured, well, my settings are private. Well, somebody took screen captures of what he had put and who were in his private network of like 900 followers or so, and they shared it. And next thing you know, all these Division I schools across the country are pulling their Division I offers, and he got expelled from school. Oh. So, you know, it's a tough time to be a teenager. I can't imagine.
Oh, man, yeah. I can envision myself getting in trouble just like that when I was like 14, 15 years old. I have no sense at all. What was that?
And that's one of the big questions is, you know, should my kids be on it? And it's like anything. You need to provide them guidance. Yes, it is something that is out there. You know, I don't think you can completely shelter them. But at the same time, you do need to make them aware of protocol of what to do and what not to do. Share stories like that of people who are in their age group who are doing things that, you know, texting things that they shouldn't be texting or posting pictures that they shouldn't be posting and eventually having that come back to haunt them a bit.
Yeah. We talked about Pinterest the last time you were on. I'm wondering about its use. I'm seeing some people using it in their professional.
Absolutely.
Careers. Maybe you can explain for those who don't,
yes,
who aren't aware of what it is, and then how it could be used.
Well, Pinterest is it's like the old days of scrapbooking is how I think of it, where you would go and you'd find things you'd like and you'd cut them out of magazines and, you know, if they were recipes and you'd cut them and put them in a Rolodex if you were that organized. Or you find pictures of your dream cars and you cut them out and you post them up. Well, Pinterest is essentially that, where you create what are called pin boards and you can post your favorite movies, videos, images of lots and lots of different stuff. And Pinterest hasn't been around that long, but it is the third most used social network in the world. already. So it is.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, and one of the reasons that people say that it's so popular is because it's so visual, and people are visual creatures. We know that, and for people to be able to look and scan and see what other people are pinning or pin stuff for themselves to keep themselves organized. You know, I have, for example, on my Pinterest account, I'm a big reader of biographies of really interesting people who mm-hmm. remind me of what people are capable of and what I've got. And so I used to cut those pictures out and put them on my wall in my office or my home. Well, now I have a pin board, and now I can share that with other people, and other people can contribute to it or comment on it. You know, recipes, like I said, are a huge one. And it is a great place to show new products, new services, to have people comment on new products and services. And the other thing that I like about it personally, and I know a lot of other people do as well, is unlike Facebook or Twitter or LinkedIn, where you kind of have this rolling chronological timeline of content, this content doesn't roll or scroll or change. So it's really easy to find stuff that you might have pinned. It's called pinning, several months ago, whereas going back and finding something you put on Facebook a couple months ago is not as easy.
Forget that.
So it's a great tool. And in the United States, it's about 82% users are female. Europe, it's a little bit more balanced, but it is a really interesting tool worth exploring.
Genevieve in Madison says, my daughter will be finishing college and looking for a first professional job in just a couple of years. She's confident that if she deletes Facebook photos, posts, etc. before that, she'll be just fine. But when we delete things from social media, do they really go away?
That's one of the biggest misunderstandings. I actually give a presentation in one of my social media courses called The Dark Side of Social. And because I'm always talking about, you know, the value that it can bring, building communities, building networks, helping nonprofits. But one of the things that most people don't pay attention to are what are called the EULA, the End User License Agreements. So when you sign up for an account, I don't know anybody, including myself, I'm raising my hand, who ever reads those. You just click accept. Well, most of the time we don't realize that we are giving our ownership to our content and access to our content to whatever tool we're signing up with. So technically, Facebook is supposed to get rid of content after a year, but it's been found that they don't. So what happens with that content, and you know, who has access to it, and how does it play a role in terms of what we do? That's one of the questions that makes me nervous with using tools and what I share online. And again, I'm an advocate for using them, but you know, using it with caution. So I wouldn't say that I would be confident that they go away. You know, and it might be that as you know, as more and more younger people are moving into the job market, and they have been for a while, businesses will be a little bit more flexible in saying, well, of course, when I was 18, 19, 20, I would have posted silly things. But I know a lot of professionals, too, who say you should know better and you shouldn't go out and go to a place where you're going to publicly be out drinking, where potential bosses could see you, or doing things that are inappropriate or posting things that are inappropriate. So, you know, I still say play it safe. And, you know, is it really important to share that stuff with your friends? I don't think it is.
I don't think so either. Katie in Madison, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. I just had a comment about Pinterest. You were just talking about Pinterest. And I had a friend who was an artist who had created some work and put some of their own pictures on Pinterest. And they started seeing their pictures show up other places. And when they challenged Pinterest about that, they discovered that Pinterest decided that they own anything that goes on their site.
Yes, that is, if you look up Pinterest and intellectual property, that is an ongoing fight. Intellectual property is nothing but gray. You can talk to, and I've actually looked into this quite a bit. It is very hard to know who actually owns what. I don't remember the woman's name, and I'd be happy to look it up. But there is a woman who is a photographer and an attorney who spent a lot of time looking at the intellectual property rights of content that's placed on Pinterest, because she was posting her photographs. And when she started reading about who owned what when you post it, she was shocked to see how little protection artists and photographers had. So yes, you want to be very clear about what you're posting and making it clearer. They did change some of, it was like back in March or early April, they did change some of the ownership wording to make artists and photographers feel a little more comfortable. But it's not something that I know a lot of people will jump into saying, oh, I'm going to share all my stuff. Because again, yeah. Is it clear who owns it? And it's still kind of leans towards Pinterest being the owner of that content. So that's a great point.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. We had a website earlier, a Hub website.
HubSpot, HubSpot is the one that there is a social media company organization based out of Boston, Massachusetts. Great site. Really amazing people, energetic people who work there. Really expensive product, but a great, great organization. And if you want to learn about inbound marketing, which is a huge growing area, and it's a combination of social media, blogging, and search engine optimization, something I'm working with. We're working with a lot of businesses on. It's a great.
So how
great
do you resource. Combine all those?
Exactly. Interconnecting all of those to help organizations maximize what they're doing online and succeed online. And it does take all of those. Just like a stool can't sit with one leg, you need three legs. You do need all three to really maximize what you can do online.
Do you know any dentists who have blogs?
Oh, yeah. A gentleman down in Texas, I can picture him perfectly. I met him at a conference, and he actually started a blog at a business helping dentists spend less time in the office, because dentists have, I guess, a high washout rate because the sheer amount of time they have to spend within their practice, and he wanted to help dentists figure out how to detach from the things that they don't need to run so that they could focus on the parts of their business that they want. And I'd be happy to look it up, but he's down in Texas, just a fabulous example of how in a niche industry you can use social media to build a product. And he goes around now to dental practices all over the United States and teaches dentists how to more efficiently run their organization. But he's built awareness through blogging and through, I think in his case, it was Facebook. So absolutely, you name a niche, there's somebody.
Well, you know, the reason I brought it up is because we're going to be talking about dentistry coming up and dental health.
Oh, yeah.
With Dr. Lowe Lakritz. But, Don, thank you so much.
Absolutely. Pleasure to be here.
Always a pleasure. We'll have you back and we'll do it again.
All right. Thanks so much.
Don Stanley, faculty associate in Life Sciences Communication, where he teaches social media and web courses. He's also owner of 3 Rhino Media. That's a social web and strategy business. And we'll have him back and do it again. And he mentioned there's some blogs. Dennis has got a blog out there. I don't know if our next dentist, Dr. Lowe Lakritz, has one, but we'll find out. And he will certainly be ready to talk with you about the importance of dental health care and to answer your dentistry questions. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.